Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from The James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available. From a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
This podcast was recorded Thursday, October 30th at 10:31 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like Ohio will have a compromise congressional district map. There is word a deal is close. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who may be able to compromise at least once in a while. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, our Snollygoster of the Week makes a federal case out of a minuscule amount of possible voter fraud. This week, we are talking about the mood of the Ohio voter, but there could be news on redistricting. By law, Ohio has to redraw its 15 congressional districts. Right now, Republicans have 10 seats, Democrats have 5. Republicans want to make that gap even wider, and Democrats are trying to hold on to whatever they can. It looked like the supermajority Republicans at the Statehouse were going to steamroll to a more heavily gerrymandered map than we have now. But there is word of a compromise among Democrats and Republicans on the Ohio Redistricting Commission. And whatever happens, we will talk about it next week. So stay tuned, as they say in the radio business. Not the podcasting business, but the radio business. Anyway, next week is Election Day. And in Ohio, there are only local issues on the ballot. No statewide issues. Lots of school board seats, city council seats, township trustees, tax levies are on the ballot. If you are mad about property taxes, or if you think your property taxes are money well spent, this is the election to show up for. But alas, most voters probably won't. Once this election is out of the way, we can turn our full attention to the 2026 election. All right, much of our attention has already focused on 2026, but now we won't have to feel guilty about it. Here in Ohio, voters next year will decide races for governor, U.S. Senate, members of Congress, the state legislature, other statewide offices. There may be a couple of statewide questions on the ballot. And while President Trump is not on the ballot, the incumbent president always casts a big shadow over a midterm election. And the 47th president of the United States casts a really big shadow. We have a good snapshot of how Ohio voters are feeling a year out from the election, which will decide the governor's office and Congress. Bowling Green State University is out with its latest poll. The top takeaways: President Trump's popularity in Ohio has dipped since he took office, though as many, many 10 months ago. And the races for governor and U.S. Senate appear very close, at least for now. The director of the poll is Robert Alexander. He directs Bowling Green State University's Democracy and Public Policy Network. Professor Alexander, welcome back to Snollygoster.
Thanks for having me, Mike. It's good to be back.
How are things in Bowling Green, Ohio?
Well, today they're gray, but usually it's sunshine and 70 degrees every single day in Ohio.
Oh,
but I know I can't get away with that, but things at BGSU, for sure.
We need to get up there more often because in Columbus, we don't see the sun from now until till March. But anyway, well, first, this warning for our listeners, this podcast will include a lot of numbers. Numbers can be hard to follow on audio podcasts, so we will try to go slowly. You've been warned. We'll get into the specific questions in a moment, Robert, but I always look for a theme in polls. And what I found reading a poll is roughly 55 to 60% of those you surveyed don't like the nation's economy, say democracy is not working, freedom of speech and freedom of assembly are under threat. I read that as Ohio voters are a little bit unsettled. Is that the way you read them?
I would say that generally speaking, you know, you kind of led with what's the mood of the state, and the mood is not good. It's been a pretty sour mood, certainly now, but even last year when we were polling, we found that Ohioans are generally pretty unhappy about a lot of things. So even though we've had a change in administration, this kind of negative feeling persists. It's flipped a little bit. You know, some of that negative feeling was certainly the independents last time around were kind of siding a little bit more with Republican policies, but this time they're kind of siding more against Republicans. So yeah, it's a pretty negative mood out there on a variety of fronts.
Now, just to get into the weeds a little bit, you weight your polls, as all polls are weighted, and this was weighted to align with last year's election, correct?
Yes, you know, we try and model our sample to look like that electorate from the 2024 presidential election. So it should be weighted essentially to a 10-point Trump electorate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Now, Trump's favorability has dropped 16 points since your poll in April. It stands at 41% approve, 51% view him unfavorably. So 41% favorable, 51% unfavorable. Is that surprising, or is that just the way it goes? You know, I always say when presidents are presidential candidates, they promise everything when they're running, and then they get elected, and then they realize, oh, I got to govern now. I got to work with Congress. Not everything's so easy. So your approval rating is going to dip a little bit, right?
I think that that's absolutely the case, particularly a second-term president. And Trump is, again, kind of odd in being a second-term president with a gap in between. And I think that, you know, some of the maybe negatives that were associated with Trump, you know, back by the end of 2020, that campaign cycle, have kind of come back into focus for a lot of those voters that are more kind of adjacent voters that show up every once in a while, every 4 years. And I think that they're kind of looking at that and getting this second look again and going, oh, yeah, I had forgotten about, you know, some of those negatives. And certainly the larger point is you're seeing a trend over the course of this year where, you know, he was viewed positively at the outset, pretty even there in April. And now, yeah, he's sunk some. And most of that is actually among his core supporters. So we've saw a 10-point drop among Republicans that supported him in April to now.
Wow. Any particular issue causing him problems, or is it your overall vibe?
Vibes, baby, vibes. You know, I think one of the things that we're seeing is, you know, one area in particular, tariffs. I think the tariff issue is something that has been a kind of a harder sell among his core supporters, and, you know, kind of tied in with the economy. A little surprising to see so many Ohioans that feel like the economy is still not, you know, working for them. And I think this kind of tariff uncertainty is another piece of that puzzle, that there's a lot of Republicans that don't necessarily believe that those tariffs are going to work for the United States and certainly for Ohioans, and believe that they will work for corporations or the wealthy. And that's not, I think, the vibe that Trump is trying to put forward. He wants to put that vibe that it's gonna help American workers. And that is not what we're seeing as far as the perception among Democrats, Republicans, and independents.
Yeah, your poll found that basically 60% of Ohioans oppose the tariffs, and 2/3 of the respondents felt the tariffs will help the rich and or corporations and hurt the working and middle class. That was a pretty stark divide when you look at that number. Who was going to benefit? It was clear that Ohioans felt that it wasn't going to help the working people.
And that is something we asked that same type of question in April, and we had similar numbers. It's only the gap has only gotten wider. And again, one of the surprising things to me is the big Republican numbers that agree on the wealthy and large corporations benefiting from the tariffs. And again, that's not the messaging you want to send when people feel unease about the economy, are checking their pocketbooks, are worried about the price of groceries. You know, when the price of groceries at Aldi starts giving you a little sticker shock, then, you know, that's problematic for a lot of folks.
Yeah, because we really haven't. I mean, some of us have felt the effects of tariffs, but it hasn't been a huge effect. I mean, the inflation rate has ticked up a little bit nationally. It's at 3%. I mean, we see it with coffee. I think that's one thing we see it with the tariff impact. I mean, I haven't seen the impact of tariffs as much as I maybe thought I would by this point.
I think part of that, and this kind of speaks back to the governing, you know, you talked about you have to govern, is the kind of give and take, the push and the pull, the we're going to tariff the heck out of other countries versus, hey, we're going to pull back that tariff. This kind of, what are we doing when it comes to tariff policy? And I think that a lot of companies are kind of coming around to this too. Like, does Trump really mean what he says when he's talking about tariffs? So there's certainly confusion around that. And confusion in politics usually doesn't play very well. It kind of has this negative connotation to it. So that's probably not a good place to be either.
Yeah, uncertainty. Wall Street doesn't like uncertainty, and neither do voters, apparently. Looking at the Ohio races, you asked voters who they preferred. Look to the race for governor. Right now, the Republican candidate, Vivek Ramaswamy, leads the only declared Democratic candidate, major candidate anyway, Amy Acton, by 3 points. That's within the margin of error. Does that surprise you, or is it still, it's very early still?
It is super early. I think that the acting camp probably has to feel pretty good about, you know, where they're at, given the name recognition of Ramaswamy and you know, the money behind him. And the fact that the state has pretty solidly voted Republican in statewide races for quite a while now, short of, you know, the mid-2000s. And so I think she probably has to feel pretty good. Again, you mentioned this margin of error. And you know, because we weight the poll, that also will increase the margin of error somewhat. And so the margin of error on this poll is 4.5%. And so, you know, that could be a potential larger gap than we see. Mm-hmm. Could be a closer gap. You don't know that, right? So I think she's got to feel pretty good about it. Again, in a midterm election, and you really kind of nailed it, Mike, that, you know, it really is about the president who is in office and this kind of referendum on that president. And kind of looking back to Trump's first midterm in 2018, I mean, Democrats really did have a blue wave. I think they captured 44 seats in the House of Representatives. It was one of the larger midterm election gains from the out party. And so I think seeing some of these numbers, you know, we're finding Trump at negative 10 in Ohio. I just saw a national poll, two different national polls out that showed that Trump was down 20 across the country. So those kinds of markers do bode well for Democrats in a state that, you know, has reliably gone red, can make it much more competitive for them. So I think it would still be a heavy lift for Acton to overtake Ramaswamy. There's a lot of time, as you said. It depends on, you know, what the mood of the state is when it comes to the economy, where they're at on Trump. Maybe a year from now, things have shifted around a little bit. But I think that she probably has to feel pretty good about this. But yeah, it's a long time out.
Yeah, Ramaswamy's unfavorables were kind of high, 39%. Unfavorable, 35% favorable. Of course, he has tied himself very closely to Trump, and whether he maintains that throughout the campaign, we shall see. But is that a red flag for him, or is that just people just don't know enough about him?
Well, there's a couple of things. It's really interesting, and every time we do these polls, it's interesting to me how little people have their minds made up about these public figures that you and I are paying attention to on a daily basis. Like, you would think, doesn't everybody have an opinion on Amy Acton? And they don't. Same with John Houston. It's like, this guy's been, you know, in statewide office for a number of years now. And there's still a lot of Ohio voters that don't really have an opinion up.
It was about half, right? In your poll, half had no opinion on either of those two.
And that's been consistent. I mean, that's been a consistent finding that we've had. The same would be true of a lot of statewide figures that, again, you know, followers of your podcast are paying attention to, and you probably can't believe, how do people not know who these folks are or have an opinion of them? And yet that's the case. So that provides opportunity to kind of peel back a second. And Ramaswamy, there's a lot more people that know of him, and those unfavorables are relatively high. Mm-hmm. Acton, not as many people know her. Favorables are decent, but it gives Ramaswamy and herself opportunities to kind of paint who she is. And obviously, kind of out of the gate, a lot of, you know, she's never held statewide office. She's never held elective office. But a lot of people do know her as, you know, the Ohio's former health director during COVID. Yeah. For some, that's going to be a real benefit. For others, that's going to be a real negative. And certainly that's something that a lot of Republicans are trying to hang on her, is kind of the lockdown, you know, Amy Acton. But, you know, I think she's probably going to try and work to turn that around to say, but, you know, here I was in a, you know, bipartisan fashion. You know, I was appointed by Mike DeWine. I've served in that cabinet, so I can work across the aisle. So again, this kind of speaks to this, you know, what is it that people are kind of looking for in 2026? Are they looking for kind of this person that has the empathy, or are they looking for this person that's more the attack dog? And I think that that's probably going to, you know, really kind of convey how this race will play out for the governorship next year.
Yeah, you've seen that with Ramaswamy. He spoke at a Turning Point USA event not too long ago, and he was trying to lower the temperature a little bit, trying to be a little bit more, you know, let's not vilify our opponents. Let's disagree vehemently, but don't vilify. You can sort of see a little bit of him softening his stances, unlike, you know, J.D. Vance is still full attack mode and Trump is still attack mode. Tim Ryan, you asked about him. He basically is a little bit closer than Acton, basically the same position against Ramaswamy. But Acton would beat him by a decent amount in a Democratic primary.
Yeah, it looks like in a primary. And again, as you point out, you know, Amy Acton has declared she's out there. Tim Ryan has kind of been, you know, in the background.
He's mulling. He continues to mull.
Tim Ryan. Yeah. Yeah. Amy Acton has declared. Tim Ryan has not, but there's been whispers about Tim Ryan in the background. But, you know, because she has been out on the campaign trail, she has been soliciting votes. She's been also racking up a lot of endorsements. And I think that those types of things make it, you know, are closing the window for a potential Tim Ryan candidacy for governor.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned independents early on. And here are the numbers. 55% strongly disapprove of President Trump. 54% support Amy Acton over Vivek Ramaswamy, and 64% support Sherrod Brown over John Husted. Will any election be decided by the independents again?
Well, you know, one of the things about the Brown race, the Brown-Husted race, is that you saw that Sherrod Brown, he was the incumbent, had high name recognition, really overperformed relative to the top of the Democratic ticket. I mean, Trump won the state by 11 points and Sherrod Brown lost by 4 points. And so this 7-point, you know, there are folks that went in there and voted for Donald Trump and then turned around and voted for Sherrod Brown. Mm-hmm. And some of those were Republicans, some of those were independents. And so in a close race, clearly, independence can be a key factor. The real issue then will be how much can Democrats and Republicans provoke those voters to get out to the polls and vote in a midterm election. We've seen over the last 10 years pretty high turnout in midterm elections. Usually, I would suggest that you see high turnout when people are not happy. You know, like if things are going well, it's like, it doesn't really matter. But when people are frustrated about the current state of affairs, which it appears as though people are, then you might see more voter turnout. I think that would be something that would probably be a good thing on the Democratic side in a midterm election. So independents clearly can have an important voice, especially in Ohio. You know, something I want to point out is Ohio loves populists. Mm-hmm. Barack Obama won the state as a populist. He did not win as kind of this corporate, you know, Democrat. He won as a populist talking about, you know, we need government to work for Main Street, not Wall Street. It's something that the Ohioans have always loved going back throughout our history. Donald Trump has really
he's a populist on steroids.
From that populist mantle. Yeah, populism on steroids. And Sherrod Brown, I mean, Sherrod Brown has run as a populist, you know, and even kind of eschewing Democrat, kind of the Democratic base from certain times. And so kind of thinking about it from that perspective, who can out-populist one another, right? You know, that's where the independents can really kind of come into play. And, you know, the Democrat brand in the state of Ohio has not been super strong. And there's actually some recent studies that have come out kind of talking about, like, how much is that weighing candidates down in states like Ohio and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. And so kind of not necessarily running from the Democratic brand, but not necessarily leaning into it either.
Yeah.
But kind of leaning into that populist rhetoric. So yeah. I think that's something you will likely see in a state that has a lot of independents. That will also be, you know, potentially a deciding factor, particularly in a close race, which I think we can expect that, you know, I'd be surprised if these races aren't within the margin of error.
It also comes down to Democrats' enthusiasm. The turnout has been down since Barack Obama was on the ballot. Is there any indication in this poll that Democrats are more in the Democrats, not independents, the folks who are clearly on the left, that they are more enthused to vote? It's early again, but are they more enthused, more engaged right now?
It is early. You know, we didn't ask, you know, how enthusiastic are you? I think that that's something that we talked about as a polling team to kind of, you know, maybe we need to add this enthusiasm question in there to kind of start gauging some of that. But I think that, you know, when you start basing things around issues like civil liberties. So like we did have questions on the civil liberties, you know, when you start thinking about National Guard and ICE and these issues that are adjacent in certain communities. So one of the things that we saw that I think is interesting that caught my attention was that on so many of these policy issues, you saw just the main difference was Democrats and Republicans. And in the other subgroups, it didn't really matter so much. But the one area that you did see some kind of deviation was with ICE questions. And you saw non-whites in our sample kind of be more adamant in their kind of dislike on how Trump has used ICE and the National Guard. And I think that that's kind of speaking to some adjacent populations. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is one of those motivating factors. And so when you talked about depressed voter turnout in Ohio, you've particularly seen that in places like Cleveland and Columbus, kind of these, you know, base areas where you see a lot of non-white voters turn out for Democrats. And so how do you translate that to, and I use the word, a student used this word many years ago, and I thought it was a good way to put it, provoke voters. Yeah. You know, you've got to almost agitate them to get out there and vote. And so what are going to be those issues that are going to, you know, really, you know, provoke them to get out there and vote in this election? And it can't just be anti-Donald Trump, right? Yeah. You've got to stand for some things too.
We'll wrap up here. There are some things that Ohioans agree on for the most part. 88% believe the Epstein case involves a cover-up. So we got that going for us. And 86% of Ohioans believe political violence is never justified. But then you look at 14% who say, yeah, sometimes it is. So take that for what it's worth.
It's kind of wild. And we did ask those questions. I mean, you know, we're trying to gauge in the wake of the Charlie Kirk. And, you know, we asked about Charlie Kirk later in the poll. So we didn't want to kind of, you know, can rile change that, yeah. Change those answers. But the Epstein stuff was fascinating. I mean, it's hard to get, you know, 9 out of 10 people to agree on, you know, toppings for a pizza. And yet, you know, Democrats, Republicans, and independents are all like, oh, yeah, there's a cover up. It's going to be it's about elites. And, you know, the conspiracy around it is something that kind of surprised me a little bit, like how many people are on that same page.
Yeah. And they're paying attention. That's the other thing you saw. So anyway, Robert Alexander, director of Bowling Green State University's Public Policy Network, and he is the director of the Bowling Green State University poll. Professor Alexander, thanks again for joining us.
Of course, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. We'll be right back.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. Okay, a warning, more numbers, please stay with me. In the three federal elections since 2018, there were 16 million votes cast in Ohio. Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose says in those elections, 167 non-citizens voted illegally. 167 out of 16 million. That is 0.001%. But a crime is a crime. So Frank LaRose referred those cases to county prosecutors. And they did not see fit to charge any of those voters with a crime. In Franklin County, the prosecutor there says there just wasn't enough evidence. So now Frank LaRose is sending the cases to the U.S. Justice Department to see if federal prosecutors will bring charges. LaRose told reporters there does not appear to be a pattern to the cases, but he says it is unusual. Very true. It happens only 0.001% of the time. For referring the cases to federal prosecutors and announcing it the week before Election Day, Frank LaRose gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. We are part of the NPR network. As always, try to give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, and Tell your friends about us. For our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.